Well, welcome back to Street Photography Magazine. I'm Bob Patterson, your host. And our guest today is Sabrina Marola. She is from Naples, Italy. She is a photographer, a storyteller, and a multimedia artist. But, Sabrina has been around the world. She's spent 8 years in China, and I'm sure she's going to tell us all about that. So, Sabrina, welcome.
Hello, Bob. Nice to meet you again.
Yes, same here. I really appreciate you being on. I've wanted to get you on with us for quite some time. And, we met initially. Sabrina reached out, sent information about herself, and happened to mention how she was one of the finalists in the Siena competition, of which I'm one of the jurors. I was thrilled by that, to actually get to meet one of these great photographers who participated in the contest. So anyway, I'm talking enough. Why don't you, Sabrina, give us a little bit of your background, how you got into photography, how you got into multimedia, what the heck were you doing over there in China for 8 years? And give us a little background, and then, we'll talk photography.
Okay. I was quite interested to photography, as many other persons, since I was a kid, because it was my father's hobby, actually. He had his dark room, and I was very curious about the things he was doing in that dark room with the door closed all the time. But I became a photographer by chance, I think, because I was really fond of music, alternative music, and was a kind of groupie maybe when I was at the high school. So I started to shoot pictures at live concerts and all these punk and metal bands and so on. And so all the alternative scene in my hometown. Actually, I studied Chinese. I'm a sinologist, and I went on and became a researcher. I was doing my PhD when I moved to China. And I became a photographer, actually, I mean, a specialized photographer, a professional, only while I was living in China. So I restarted everything again in Shanghai. And then while doing my researches, I was working for Laia Boza, which was and is an alternative webzine, quite well known in Shanghai, and with this group of friends, actually. And then, because of many reasons, let's say personal reasons, I slowly abandoned the academy, let's say the research and the university, and started to be a photographer in a few years. When I was back to Beijing in 2010, I was already a professional photographer.
Wow, and what did you do professionally? What types of photography?
My personal project were much more about street photography, and then I studied multimedia journalism, so there are some multimedia projects as well. My artistic projects are much more different, the one from the others, actually. I was a professional photographer in every kind of contest in Beijing, let's say, so still live bands and live events, many bars and so on. And by the end, this is also part of a personal project of street photography. I mean, not personal, a kind of a long-form documentary that I still have to edit about China. The first part of it is, you can see it on my website, actually, it was Roads. And then there is another chapter, which is Epiphanies. There are many topics related to contemporary China and contemporary Chinese society, its historical memory, and so on. Let's say that I shoot street photography, but thinking about these issues, actually, these topics, all the time. So it's a kind of a long-form essay, but it's at the meantime it's this kind of personal project because everything is expressed in a very subjective way.
I really enjoy a lot of the photo stories you did. We you know, as a publisher, we have a lot of people reaching out and asking, you know, what do I need to do to publish a photo story? How do I create one? And I think the work that's shown on your website, I think, are very, very good examples.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. You know, because you're not just a street photographer. I think you're a documentary photographer.
Yes, I moved from street photography to documentary photography, but I don't know when and how, to be sincere, because I don't have this strictly realistic way to portray reality, not at all. I guess the difference sometimes is just in the captions, in how much you deepen the topic, how much you know about what you're shooting, about what you're seeing in front of your eyes. And, of course, in China, that was very simple, a kind of easy task to me, because that was the topic of my researches for years. And actually, that used to be what I used to care about the most. I mean, it was about the government, it was about music, it was about daily routine. But I think it was much more about my urge to express reality the way it was, let's say. I mean, express, let some other people see what I was seeing daily around me. Because sometimes you live in China, maybe you have a very good job and you come from Europe or from some other countries, and you live there, but you're not there. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain it. You have this kind of colonial way of living your daily routine. There are many persons who don't even try in some cities, maybe more in Shanghai than in Beijing sometimes, some cities, to know some just few words of your daily language, your daily routine. So somewhere there is always, some way there is always this kind of wall. And since I know the language pretty well and I could hang along with people pretty well because I was just lucky and I liked it, maybe I wanted to show the simplest things and how much they could be representative of something really huge and important that every newspaper was talking about in a different way. I don't know if I was clear.
No, you were very clear. And that's funny, because that's something that my daughter talked about that a lot. I've told you, I don't know if I've told anybody else, but, you know, she spent 4 years in Beijing.
Yes.
And she's wanted to just jump in and, you know, learn the language and travel around and just, you know, live her life just like everybody else there, just like you. And she always commented, she'd get pretty frustrated with a lot of the expats, you know, because they would, they'd parachute into town and live there for however how long. And, yeah, they work and go to the Western bars and never really got to know anything about the country around them. And she thought that was so funny. You go that far in some place.
To stay home.
Yes, exactly. I like that. That's a great term.
So. That's all about modernity, I guess. We're all doing these all around the world. I mean, it's a global issue that everybody should think about. And I guess it's natural as well. I mean, if I go to for example, when I was in Japan, and I'm not able to speak any mm-hmm. Japanese at all. Mm-hmm. I, for the first time in Asia, I felt really, really lonely. And when I saw something like, I don't know, Starbucks or else, even if many, many Italians from the south as me hate Starbucks because we have our own espresso, our own coffee, mm-hmm. and we only like Italian coffee, of course.
I don't blame you.
I love it, yeah. We always say these kind of things. I mean, I don't, but usually Italians are very, very serious about food, you know? So you have to do it in the proper way, and the only proper way is the Italian way sometimes about food, you know? As I guess everybody can do the same with his country's food sometimes. But the funny thing is that in Japan, I was looking for Starbucks and for all these kind of places to feel at home. It's a very, very strange sensation, but that's the way it goes. I mean, food is about something ancestral, I guess, something coming from your father, your mother, your family, and everything which makes you feel secure, let's say. So I guess it makes sense that we made all these known places around the world, which are perfectly recognizable, and when we travel a lot and we feel lonely, we have this kind of comfort with this thing that we can find everywhere. Sometimes I don't know if it have it cut.
I'm writing down the time. That's why what the silence is for. Okay.
May I?
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead.
I wasn't sure. I even forgot what I was talking about. Anyway,
food.
Yes, we create all these places that we can recognize everywhere. And I don't know if it ever happened to you before, but sometimes while I was living between China and Italy and many, many other airports where I had to stop over and so on, the airport became the place where I felt like home, actually. Airport, train stations, sometimes they are the place you see more in your own life as a commuter and so on. So it's very, very, everything is subverted. It's completely different from what we used to think about it, let's say. So I don't know if you ever saw my project about McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not fast food, actually. Fast foods and people sleeping over in fast foods in China, which is a quite unique phenomenon, I think, that I've seen only in Asia. I don't know if there is also in the States and so on. In Italy, of course, it doesn't happen. So it was quite strange and new and funny to me at first.
No, I love that project. It's on Sabrina's website, and it's under photo, and it's called mobile, I think. And
yes, it's a mobile photography project actually, because it was supposed to become a multimedia, but then I had to come back to Italy, so it stayed as a series of portraits. One of these days, I will finish it in China, I guess.
No, it's funny. I really enjoyed that one, and I wanted to talk about that, as a matter of fact. But it reminded me, my son is a photographer. He was in photojournalism school, and he did his internship in Beijing for a magazine over there because his sister lived there. So he spent the summer there, and very talented photographer. And one of my favorite photos that he brought back from there were these two women sleeping in a restaurant. And I thought that was so funny. And then I saw your story. I thought, well, that must be common.
Yes, it's very, very common. And I think when you get there is something you really wonder about all the time. And you never really get accustomed to. So I was very, very curious. And, you know, then you start to know the stories of people losing their houses or simply moving from one town to the other because maybe they have just a job interview or they have to see their kids or their who are at the university or they have some exams. I mean, there is all this life going through these McDonald's and these people sleeping there, or they just lost the place where they were living. And so it becomes a kind of refuge. And that was my view while I was shooting it, or at least while I was writing the introduction to it, and I was going through all these pictures.
Now my thoughts are that the food is so bad there, you're better off sleeping rather than eating.
Sometimes they don't even order the food, to be sincere. They just go there and sleep down in a corner.
And that's one of the benefits of being an outsider, you know, because you notice things that the local people don't even pay attention to. And you can find them fascinating.
Yes, of course. And every daily thing, actually, as in every place, also at home, to be sincere, has its reason, its causes, its why and how and where and so on. And it's very strange that nobody notices it. I mean, nobody has a question about it. It's, you know, the routine is not about something you question about usually, because life is fast and you don't. You just don't.
That reminds me of one of your other projects called Non-Places.
Yeah. And I'm quite obsessed by this kind of contemporary society issues, I guess.
I know. I'm actually fascinated by the photos are excellent. And this is my takeaway from it. And these are places that we see every day, all the time. They surround us. We walk through them. Don't even notice them. And you obviously do. What can you tell us about this?
Well, to be sincere, it was also, maybe I started to shoot it when it was something like 2005 or 6, something like that. I was, when I was teaching in Italy at university, but I was studying and doing research in Shanghai as a PhD, but I was also a translator. Because, well, to be sincere, I needed money, so I used to travel around China alone a lot. And at the meantime, I was very interested in cultural studies, which was was the main topic of my PhD thesis, the rise of cultural studies in China as an academic discipline, let's say. So I was very interested to one of the most important anthropologists who was talking about non-places lately, Marc Augier, French. And yeah, it was one of the first talking about people listening to their own music with their own Walkman inside the subways. Or about all these amusement parks around the world. And in the same way, he was talking about refugee camps or airports or, let's say, McDonald's or other fast foods and so on. So I was very fascinated. And at the meantime, I was experimenting a new camera and I was only shooting in black and white, which is still what I prefer to do with all my projects. And maybe I was a bit confused and depressed because of some personal life events, you know, love and all these kind of things. I was still in my 20s. And I started to be to feel very, very protected, let's say, with my camera. I was behind it, and I could stare at everything going on, I don't know, outside of the train or inside the airport. I was just in a corner. Nobody was noticing me, and nobody was thinking I was a terrorist at the time. And so that I could shoot all these pictures of this very strange society I was part of, but I didn't completely feel part of some way. I was just looking at it from the outside. Let's say it was just like a moving, you know, a film going on over and over. And I was just attracted by people, their stories, their faces, the lights, and the way you can just transmit it. You think maybe you pretend to transmit it, to communicate it just through your photographs. Then maybe that's just your imagination many times. And yeah. And I was, I think maybe it's a bit political, a political judgment. I mean, it's not a good judgment, maybe, about this society and the alienation it can create. But that was the way I feel That was the way I felt and the way I still feel about it. Sometimes we just get lost in all these flows of people, all these messes of people and sounds and so on. And we are detached. We lose our contact with something which I feel is much more natural and it's just deeper inside everybody.
Well, sticking with the non-places theme, you know, yeah, you say you shoot a lot in black and white, and a lot of your photos have kind of a gritty feel to them. I don't know if you're shooting at a very high ISO or you're doing that on purpose.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that?
Well, a friend of mine used to say that we used to put sea sand on our pictures, let's say.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because that made it much more direct and realistic, let's say. Maybe it is a funny way to say that imperfection is always something, I don't know, I feel it much more evocative than a perfect picture. I like it to be blurred. I like it to be to have high ISO and not to be fixed, maybe, because I love to use many times cameras who are not that good at all. I mean, when I do photojournalism, I have my very well-known camera, which everybody uses, and I can do also my videos, and every picture is perfect, and so on. But when I have to do something else for myself or this kind of projects, I prefer maybe a camera which doesn't have more than less than 10 pixels and mm-hmm. an old one maybe from 10 years ago. And it's like using film, actually. It's like you, to me at least, it's not the same. But it's to be sure that you will have many mistakes. And I'm not scared about these mistakes. I look for them, actually. And many times, you can see it in Epiphanies, maybe. One of the last pictures, there is this portrait of this woman with her nephew. And for example, I developed my technique, let's say, and I used to move the camera on purpose. So I have this portrait, which is very blurred, and is exactly what I want, because that was my idea of family in contemporary China, when there is always only one old woman, or maybe also the grandfather and the child, and there is nobody else, because the others are working, maybe in another town, or just for 12 or more hours a day, and I don't know, that was my way to express something. I mean, I feel like that is my way to play with the camera and with the lights and everything. I guess it is because I used to shoot film before.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, I used to prefer that kind of style. And maybe it's personal. I've always been very scared by perfection. So even if I'm looking at some kind of wedding pictures or I'm giving a look to some fashion pictures, I'm attracted by the ones who are more genuine, let's say, in my view. Of course, it's just my personal view. In my perception, are more natural, and what is natural to me, what is human, must have mistakes.
No, that's a good point. I mean, none of us are perfect. And yeah,
I'm not for sure.
No, nobody is. It's funny because, I mean, if you visit some of these discussion forums, like on DP Review, and people talk about the cameras or the lenses, and, you know, I won't use that lens because it's not absolutely perfect. It's a little blurry on the corners, blah, blah, blah. And right here, you prove, forget about that stuff. Go out and use what you have. And if you know what you're doing, you can make beautiful photos with it. One thing I like.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point. But of course, I mean, the first thing every time is to have a topic, to have something to say. I guess it's not about me. I mean, I'm talking in general. Mm-hmm. I'll never be sure that I have something to say. But when I see something, to me, I have to have this perception that there was somebody who wanted to express something. I mean, it's not just like, okay, shooting the picture or the dress, okay, shooting the picture, something more, something like looking for beauty or something you're looking for while you're shooting. Yes, it's a research. And then, of course, all your perfect shootings or your great lenses and everything, they are layered in yourself, so you'll use all the things you know. I mean, to know, the more you know, the more you will be creative. But it's not technical. It's when you mature your own way to use the techniques, let's say, your medium, your media.
So are you doing a lot of commercial work now, like fashion photography?
Not fashion, but I'm doing much more lately, like family events sometimes, because, well, as you know, I have a chronic disease, so I cannot work every day. And to be sincere, I find it really, really funny and interesting. I mean, meeting all these children with all their very nice dresses, and it's. But I, also, when I do that, I mean, it's quite natural. I mean, I always tell people that I will shoot them naturally. I will never tell them what to do. Mm-hmm. I will just follow them during their daily routine. So usually I go to their place. Let's say it's kind of documentaristic attitude, if you want. I don't know. But that's the way it goes. I mean, I follow them. Go to their place early in the morning, and then I'm following them during their special days, events. I mean, what happens or not, when they're scared, where they're not, I mean, many things happen when you shoot this kind of events. But at the meantime, I'm doing some multimedia documentaries as well. Of course, slowly, but I'm doing it still.
So when you're doing a project for a client, do you try to capture, you know, the images you know they're going to like? And then once you get those in the can, take some of the ones in your own personal style? Or before they engage you, do you say, look, this is my style? If you like it, let's move forward. If you don't like it, then I'm not the photographer for you.
I mainly say it this way, but I'm
probably, yeah, I'm probably nicer gentle. Than I said.
I'm kind. Yes, definitely kinder. But yes, that's the way it goes. And of course, I mainly shoot in black and white. In this case, I use much more color as well, because they need to have it as well. I mean, it's, and actually I'm getting into color lately. I'm quite interested to it. Also, if I don't feel it so natural, I guess I still have to study about color. Even if I go back to film, to color film, I will have to study a lot. But yes, I usually send to them these kind of pictures. I tell them that I'm not going to set the stage or something for them or else, and I will follow them. Usually I follow them, really. And yeah, that's the way I do. So they feel, and they usually feel much more comfortable, I think, about it. And when I will shoot the one portrait that I know I really need, because they will need it later to remember the whole day, well, they will be laughing and they will be feeling really comfortable, because I've been following them all day long. So it doesn't really make a difference if they look perfect. I mean, usually I the picture I'm giving to them is always the one which is not perfect, when there is somebody laughing or there is a kid who looks really bored and so on. I mean, I mean the funny one, let's say.
Boy, if you follow kids around all day, that's pretty tiring.
Yeah, so diciamo, let's say that my body is not always really into this mood, but I push myself.
Yeah.
When I do it, I mean, that's not my only job. I'm working as a multimedia journalist, or sometimes I'm doing editing for other journalism, so video editing or editing somebody else's pictures and so on. I mean, I'm doing many different kind of jobs.
Yeah, that's nice. Keeps things fresh. So what do you mean by being a multimedia journalist?
Multimedia journalism is just about not creating just a photo, a reportage or a video reportage, but the full package, let's say. So it will be about an article with maybe an infographic or maybe an interactive timeline and maybe some video and so on. So you can do an iBook, so it's about longer reportages as well. You can do an iBook as, I don't know, on the New York Times, you many times see very, very nice, also long for multimedia documentaries. Yeah, that's the model. I mean, you can find it on The Guardian, on the New York Times, but also in many other newspapers around the world.
So do you do this work for newspapers, or are you...
As a freelance, yeah, I'm still freelancing. So many times I do it with somebody else. And actually, when I had to leave China and I was studying multimedia journalism at Bolton University in China, which is a UK university. And now I'm working again on my final project, which is about a place in my hometown, which is, let's say, a kind of commons, okay? We have, since few years, these public spaces which have been, let's say, occupied by locals and then recognized by local government. And they become community places. The one I'm studying is the first one of them, which created this kind of model. And it used to be a community of artists and cultural operators during all the protests in 2011 and 12 that were going on in Italy and across Europe. And the different thing happening was that the local government, let's say, on my hometown, started to recognize their cultural work. So all the workshops and the free live concerts and all the things going on through this building. And they created a new series of laws, let's say, local rules to regulate these new kind of places. And yeah, it's about it, actually. It's like, can art change the world, or at least its juridical assets? Because everything was born from this group of artists.
Speaking of Naples, your hometown, I've been there. We were on a cruise, so we actually took a small group tour, and they just took us right out of the city. You know, we went down to the Amalfi Coast, and so I didn't get to see much of it, but I've seen a lot of street photography. It seems to have a very vibrant street life. You know, it looks like people are out on the streets all the time, living their lives, and it just looks like a great place to shoot on the street. Is that so?
Definitely, yes. I mean, we're Southern, you know, we come from the South. We're always outside, we're never inside. I guess this has something to do with the climate and with our warm winters and so. And yes, usually, I mean, if you even if you go to a bar in the historical center of Naples, it's a very, very tiny place because you take a beer and then you go outside. So everything usually happens on the street. Yes, that's perfectly true. You notice something very important about the way we live in this place. And anyway, now it's just like blooming again after many, many, many years in which we still have many, many problems we are very well known about. But lately, I mean, tourists are coming back and many, many cultural events are happening. And I don't know, I think in some places or everywhere in Italy, some way the crisis made us all, even if I wasn't here during the at the very start of the economic crisis, I was in China. But my perception as somebody coming from the outside was that everybody was awake, let's say. For example, in my hometown, well, people from my generation, people who now are in their 30s, well, they left. Everybody left because there was no job. There was, let's say, no future. And we just left to look for a job around the world. But during the crisis, many persons lost their jobs. And they decided to come back because the way they were living in other places, by the end, wasn't that good. Maybe wasn't enough. Or they just wanted to try to be back because the crisis was there and was back home. They were unemployed there or here at the same in the same way. So there are many, many new ideas, many, many new proposals. All the youngs who left now are young adults, and they just create many interesting things, actually. So, yeah, it's vibrating culturally. It's very, very interesting to me. I mean, China was interesting because, how to say, the interest was in, it's different. It wasn't my hometown. It wasn't my country. Everything was interesting. But culturally, you had to look for something very, very good, for a good play, for a poetry reading, an underground concert. You always had to do this kind of research, this kind of alternative research also sometimes. I mean, I'm not talking so much about Beijing or Shanghai, but usually it's difficult to find so many interesting things culturally around Chinese cities. I mean, if you're accustomed to a different reality, I mean, like this is a place where many, many people from the south come to study to university. So there is all this, this series daily, this series of very interesting events. I mean, it could be very cheap film, very cheap movies, or very cheap little tiny theaters where you can give a look to a new play from somebody who is actually well known, but he also works in very tiny theaters. I mean, something is happening in here. And there is this kind of new energy. And I think this also comes from what is happening with commons and with these places and these people's work, which is being recognized in many, many different parts of the city. Now we have 7 places who actually were occupied by citizens and then we're transforming places where you can find your gym or you can have a drama workshop or a photography workshop or whatever you're looking for. I mean, or many activities for children. And it is always coming from, coming from the people, actually. The idea doesn't come from the local government. It comes from the street.
Wow. So if somebody reads the article about you and they go, boy, I really want to go to Naples. Where would you recommend they go to capture some of this activity on the streets?
Activities on the streets are everywhere. This kind of places, actually, I mean, you can go to L'Asilo, which is the place I was talking about. I mean, the one I was developing my documentary about. Or you could go to XOPG, which is another place not that far from it, and many other places like this. But I think the best thing is just to maybe follow the subway if you're a foreigner is the simplest thing. Just take the underground, go to the city center, and never take a bus or a subway, never again. Just do it on your feet, because it's a very crowded town, but it's not that big, and you can walk from the city center to the seaside, and everything is there. Just, I don't need to give you any great advice, because as you said, it's vibrant city, and everything happens outside, and you just cannot... cannot plan anything. You just can choose different areas of the town. The historical ones, of course, are very, very beautiful. And at every corner, maybe you'll find a church. Some will be closed, some will be open. You just go to the city centers and see.
Oh, well, thanks. That's great advice.
Anyway, you're welcome whenever you want to come over.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back over there. Probably not going for a couple of years, but so let me ask you. Oh, people are going to ask. I need to ask you. So, what kind of gear are you using right now? What kind of photographic equipment?
Well, I use a Canon 60D, but I also use my father's Pentax, and so it was an Asahi 1000. And with all its lens, I also use a Pentax K20. And I have, more than one or two Fuji cameras. Let's say for photojournalism, I usually use the Canon one. Mm-hmm. And for all the other projects, I also use my film cameras. And yes, these are the ones I use the most. I have many cameras, to be sincere. But for photojournalism, of course, I'm going with the... Since I usually do multimedia, I use the Canon. Because it's the... I need to be able to shoot my videos as well. K20 is very nice, actually. Because I can use all the old lenses from my film camera. So... But it's much more about, your personal feeling with the camera in your hands.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I used it so many times before that that's my camera. That's it. Maybe if I would change now, I would go for a Ricoh or for another Fuji. For something lighter and lighter day by day, I guess. I'm becoming old, maybe.
No, you're not. But yeah. So, which Fuji do you have?
I can't. If you.
That's all right.
Give me the time. I need to check because I can't remember. Why don't we talk about something else while I'm looking for it?
Yeah, that's fine. Well, we're just about ready to wrap up, so why don't you tell us where people can find out more about you and see your work?
Where people can find more about me? On Lens Culture, there are some projects, because they published the one we were talking about, All China's Fast Food Dreams, and the series is over there, I mean, on my personal page on Lens Culture, and was published on Lens Culture. There is a very nice article they wrote about it. And actually over there is also another project of mine we didn't talk about, which is about the reason I was back to Italy, actually. China is a very interesting place, but it's very polluted, and this influenced my health, and it was quite massive. So I have MCS and fibromyalgia, and this is a, let's call it multimedia, because actually it is written, it is pictures and diaries, and it was published through Instagram at first. But it is a kind of diary about fibromyalgia and MCS. And it was a long project, I guess. It started more than 2 years ago, and it is still going on. And well, it's a diary, but it is also much more about explaining how fibromyalgia and MCS work and what they really are, and maybe about claiming my rights, because it's not recognized in Italy, and it wasn't recognized in China as well, and I was told that I was depressed all the time in China and in Italy many, many times, actually. In the region in which I live, it is still not recognized. I don't know, if you want to ask me about it, I don't really know what to say about it now.
Well, that was a really good article, and we'll put a link to that in the article, in our article about you, as well as all your lens culture links. So we'll get those from you afterwards, and make sure we put those in the story. And of course, your website, right? People can find you on your website.
Yes. And also on private photo review, actually, because sometimes I write for them. So there are some articles I wrote for them and some pictures I shoot for them.
Yep. And what's the link to your website?
www.sabrinamerolla.org.
Org. Cool. So, well, very good. And then we can talk about that camera offline. You can give me that. We'll just put that in the article. We always list people's gear in the articles because everybody asks.
Yes.
It's not important, but everybody wants to know. So.
No, it's just that my memory is not always that good. Sometimes I keep forgetting things while I'm talking about them.
Yeah, you just wait. Okay. Well, Sabrina, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. I know everybody's going to love to see your work and love to learn about you. And I just appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks to you, actually. It was my honor to be with you. And thanks to everybody reading and listening to us.
And that's a wrap. Okay, hang on.
Hadouls. And they just create many interesting things, actually. So, yeah, it's vibrating culturally. It's very, very interesting to me. I mean, China was interesting because, the interest was in, it's different. It wasn't my hometown. It wasn't my country. Everything was interesting. But culturally, you had to look for something very, very good, for a good play, for a poetry reading, an underground concert. You always had to do this kind of research, this kind of alternative research also sometimes. I mean, I'm not talking so much about Beijing or Shanghai, but usually it's difficult to find so many interesting things culturally around Chinese cities. I mean, if you're accustomed to a different reality, I mean, like this is a place where many, many people from the south come to study to university. So there is all this, this serious daily, this series of very interesting events. I mean, it could be very cheap film, very cheap movies, or very cheap little tiny theaters where you can give a look to a new play from somebody who is actually well-known, but he also works in very tiny theaters. I mean, something is happening in here. And there is this kind of new energy. And I think this also comes from what is happening with the commons and with these places and these people's work, which is being recognized in many, many different parts of the city. Now we have 7 places who actually were occupied by citizens and then were transformed in places where you can find your gym or you can have a drama workshop or a photography workshop or whatever you're looking for. I mean, or many activities for children. And it is always coming from, coming from the people, actually. The idea doesn't come from the local government. It comes from the street.
Wow. So if somebody reads the article about you and they go, boy, I really want to go to Naples, where would you recommend they go to capture some of this activity on the streets?
Activities on the streets are everywhere. These kind of places, actually, I mean, you can go to L'Asilo, which is the place I was talking about. I mean, the one I was developing my documentary about. Or you could go to XOPG, which is another place not that far from it, and many other places like this. But I think the best thing is just to maybe follow the subway if you're a foreigner is the simplest thing. Just take the underground, go to the city center, and never take a bus or a subway, never again. Just do it on your feet, because it's a very crowded town, but it's not that big, and you can walk from the city center to the seaside, and everything is there. Just, I don't need to give you any great advice because as you said, it's vibrant city and everything happens outside, and you just cannot plan anything. You just can choose different areas of the town. The historical ones, of course, are very, very beautiful, and at every corner maybe you'll find a church. Some will be closed, some will be open. You just go to the city centers and see.
Oh, well, thanks. That's great advice.
Anyway, you're welcome whenever you want to come over.
Yeah, I can't wait to get back over there. Probably not going for a couple of years, but so let me ask you. Oh, people are going to ask. I need to ask you. So what kind of gear are you using right now? What kind of photographic equipment?
Well, I use a Canon 60D, but I also use my father's Pentax. And so it was an Asahi 1000. And with all its lengths, I also use a Pentax K20. And I have, more than one or two Fuji cameras. Let's say for photojournalism, I usually use the Canon one. Mm-hmm. And for all the other projects, I also use my film cameras. And yes, these are the ones I use the most. I have many cameras, to be sincere. But yeah, for photojournalism, of course, I'm going with the... Because I usually do multimedia, I use the Canon, because it's the I need to be able to shoot my videos as well. K20 is very nice, actually, because I can use all the old lenses from my film camera. So, but it's much more about, I think it's much more about your personal feeling with the camera in your hands.
Oh yeah,
and I used it so many times before that that's my camera. That's it. Maybe if I would change now, I would go for a Ricoh or for another Fuji. For something lighter and lighter day by day, I guess. I'm becoming old, maybe.
No, you're not. But yeah, wait, so which Fuji do you have?
You know, I can't. If you.
That's all right.
Give me the time. I need to check because I can't remember. Why don't we talk about something else while I'm looking for it?
Yeah, that's fine. Well, we're just about ready to wrap up, so why don't you tell us where people can find out more about you and see your work?
Where people can find more about me? Well, Lens Culture, there are some projects because they published the one we were talking about, All China's Fast Food Dreams. And yeah, the series is over there, I mean, on my personal page on Lens Culture, and was published on Lens Culture. There is a very nice article they wrote about it. And actually over there is also another project of mine we didn't talk about, which is about the reason I was back to Italy, actually. China is a very interesting place, but it's very polluted, and this influenced my health, and it was quite massive. So I have MCS and fibromyalgia, and this is a, let's call it multimedia, because actually it is written, it is pictures and diaries, and it was published through Instagram at first. But it is a kind of diary about fibromyalgia and MCS. And it was a long project, I guess. It started more than 2 years ago, and it is still going on. Well, it's a diary, but it is also much more about explaining how fibromyalgia and MCS work and what they really are, and maybe about claiming my rights, because it's not recognized in Italy, and it wasn't recognized in China as well, and I was told that I was depressed all the time in China and in Italy, many, many times, actually. In the region in which I live, it is still not recognized. I don't know, if you want to ask me about it, I don't really know what to say about it now.
Well, that was a really good article, and we'll put a link to that in the article, in our article about you, as well as all your Lens Culture links. So we'll get those from you afterwards, and make sure we put those in the story. And of course, your website, right? People can find you on your website.
Yes, and also on private photo review, actually, because sometimes I write for them. So there are some articles I wrote for them, or some pictures I shoot for them.
Yep, and what's the link to your website?
www.sabrinamerolla.org.
Org. Cool. So, well, very good. And then we can talk about that camera offline. You can give me that. We'll just put that in the article. We always list people's gear in the articles because everybody asks.
Yes.
It's not important, but everybody wants to know. So.
Yeah, it's just that my memory is not always that good. Sometimes I keep forgetting things while I'm talking about them.
Yeah, you just wait. Okay. Well, Sabrina, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today. I know everybody's going to love to see your work and love to learn about you. And I just appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks to you, actually. It was my honor to be with you. And thanks to everybody reading and listening to us.